We are back. I am Paula Gordon. Bill Russell and I are with Edward O. Wilson. I must say that reading Diversity of Life was quite a sobering experience. It was elating. It was very exciting, from the little bitties to the great bigs. But you talk about Earth at the present being at or near its capacity to carry. Isn't that part of the problem with all of us crowding out, as you say, the other species?
Yeah, something has to go. A rather disturbing fact about human development is not just the impact of population, the number of people on Earth, but the very understandable desire of 80% of the people of the Earth who live in the developing countries to improve their own quality of life. And they're going to do it one way or the other. They're driving to do it, to come up somewhere close to our own level. The problem is that as they do this, they're consuming more and more resources faster and faster. The best way to conceive of this is the ecological footprint that environmental scientists have developed. The ecological footprint is the amount of productive land required to produce food, water, living space, transportation, and so on. The ecological footprint is not just what's immediately around you, but drawn in little bits and pieces from all around the world, like a little bit of Costa Rica for some coffee, maybe a small part of Iceland for fish, and so on. And the ecological footprint of an average American is 12 acres. The ecological footprint of a person living in the developing world, where 80% of the people are, is 1 acre.
Correct.
In order for the rest of the world to come up to U.S. standards and thus have that size footprint, with present technology, would require two more planet Earths.
Oops.
That's the problem.
And there are no available candidates.
No. We can dream all we want about settling Mars, but, well, forget it.
In the next 50 years?
No, never.
Also,
we'll never take care of population problems by shooting people out in space. We've got to make room for them here on planet Earth. And we've got to settle humanity down before it wrecks the planet. That's really what the 21st century is going to be all about.
You talk about something that got my attention, and that is what we're doing now as another major extinction event, comparable to what happened when the dinosaurs disappeared. And we tend to get all excited about that and the big meteorites and all that goes around that. But you're saying that our impact is having essentially the same result as the meteor that hit us at the end of the dinosaur era.
About a half billion years ago, the first large organisms made it onto the land. That was a major event which started life on Earth as we know it, half a billion years ago. And since that time, we know from the paleontological evidence, the evidence from fossils, that there have been five great extinction events. We know that at least one of them, the one that ended the age of dinosaurs 65 million years ago, was due to a giant meteorite strike, and it's possible that the others were as well. Those were spaced apart about 100 million years, very, very roughly. And most biologists who study the life on Earth, that is, the diversity of plants and animals, are in agreement. They were in the early stages of number six, this time not a meteorite, giant meteorite, but human activity. If we continue eliminating the natural environments of the world, like the forest and the coral reefs, where most of the diversity of life, species of plants and animals exist, then I think by the middle of this coming century, we will have eliminated as many as one quarter of all the different kinds of plants and animals in the world. And that amounts to one of these giant extinction spasms, as they're called.
That's not free. Things happen when you wipe out a quarter of the species, don't they? I mean, you can't just say, oh, well, we won't miss them. There are plenty left.
The idea, you know, it's bad for them, but so what? It doesn't affect me.
Yeah, this is what's called what I like to call the first stage of denial.
And that is not a river in Egypt.
Yeah, this is the Upper Nile.
once people look at the evidence, and it's not hard to understand, although it's not as most people don't think of it as urgent as, say, pollution or the climatic warming, but when they look at the evidence, then the first thing they say often is, well, so we're eliminating a large part of life on Earth, the creation with a capital C, incidentally. And isn't it true that evolution has always replaced it in the past? And the answer to that is yes, but with a terrible twist. Evolution will replace this loss of species that we're imposing on the Earth and ourselves in the next few decades. But in the past, those great extinction spasms required 10 million years on average to replace by evolution. So our descendants, who are told, say, 50 years from now or 100 years from now, that what we have carelessly allowed to be to slip away won't be replaced for 10 million years, they're going to be peeved. Now,
yes. Why they'll should be they, disappointed.
They'll
yes,
be
indeed.
Disappointed enough. But then you say, oh. It's second stage of denial that I've defined as,
this is the middle.
So what? So what? Well, suppose we only end up with 50%. Well, let me count of the species surviving this onslaught of humanity. Well, let me count the ways. For one thing, the biological diversity on Earth is a priceless resource of scientific information and new pharmaceuticals, new products of all kinds. Most of the species on this planet have never been even identified and given a scientific name, much less studied as sources of benefit for humanity. A second reason is that we depend on them and these natural ecosystems they compose for the water and new earth and very air we breathe. But then when all that is said and done, and it's overwhelming in importance, what it comes down to, in my opinion, is very much a moral argument. Who are we to destroy the creation, if I might use that term, the product of hundreds of millions of years of evolution? But even if you're traditional, you believe in the fundamentalist view that it was put here all at once by a creator, that viewpoint leads you to the same conclusion, I believe. Who are we to destroy the creation? And I believe that once we think it through in terms not just practical, but moral terms, public attitude about this extinction will change.
You say we have to settle humanity down. You also say somewhere in, maybe it was in Consilience, that our childhood is about to be over as we enter an age where we can engineer our own genetic future. Both of these sound like adolescence being challenged and that we're going to have to reach a more mature, if you will, state as a species. Well, how do we do that?
By understanding who we are and where we came from and how we relate to this planet, quite plainly. We have to understand exactly, as we can make that knowledge, the impact of our burgeoning population on the environment and our natural resources, and bring that into some kind of equilibrium so that our natural resources are sustainable. And that can be done, but we don't have enough knowledge now, and we're not trying hard enough to get it, and what we have in the way of knowledge is not transmitted properly to the public at large, in good part because our main public intellectuals, our talk show host and our op-ed page writers and our advisors of political leaders and so on, are largely ignorant of this subject. Having been trained mostly in government and law, they don't know anything about the real world outside of their...
And you'll be happy to tell them that.
many scientists are eager to not so much embarrass them as to try to open this knowledge to them so that they can make better use of it than they have made in the past. And... that's what we mean by settling down, developing policies of population and environment that's global, and at the same time paying more attention, I think, to the rest of life on Earth. We can get through this bottleneck. We can take care of 8 billion if we're very careful and manage our resources right. We can get a better life for people, and we can do it by bringing most of the rest of life through with us. But we're not if we continue in the sort of short-sighted, reckless, territorial, barbaric, blinkered manner in which we are now conducting our collective lives.
The man who cares so much about this is Edward O. Wilson. He's a biologist. And we'll be back for more of these wonderful opinions when Bill Russell and I return in just a moment.